Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the entire internet. A busy docket today. First, Lori Vallow's attorney is at it again. Second, Barry Morphew is looking for his wife, Suzanne. Third, a fashion magnate is in some big trouble, allegedly. Fourth, a follow-up on the case of the two-year-old that was abandoned at the Goodwill Donation Center in Mississippi. Fifth, a story that will restore your faith in humanity. Next, an inmate escapes from a prison van while in the drive-thru. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for joining us. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button and also hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. Now, we have a busy docket today. And yes, that's right. First on the docket, Lori Vallow's attorney, Mark Means, is at it again. Now, he has gone so far now as to say that he has filed a motion to disqualify the prosecuting attorney and motion to extend time on motion to dismiss. Well, let me tell you, when you attempt to disqualify a prosecuting attorney for what is alleged in Mr. Means' motion, I'm telling you better have your facts lined up, because Mark Means, on behalf of Lori Vallow, has stated that he has received audio recordings between the prosecutor, special prosecutor, Mr. Robert Wood, and a material witness, allegedly Summer Shiflett, which is the biological sister of the defendant. Now, apparently this encounter occurred in October of 2020, and apparently there's a recording of it. You would think if you're going to do bad things, you're probably not going to record it. Needless to say, the recording clearly illustrates Mr. Wood's attempt to coerce, unduly influence, coach, and or intimidate said material witness in this case. In addition, there's an alleged audio recording of Mr. Wood interviewing another material witness, a woman by the name of Zumella Pastinas, also right about the same time as this other recording, October of 2020, discussing matters that supports the state's position of the case. Defendant asserts the following, and this is where it gets pretty bold. He is alleging that the prosecutorial misconduct violated the due process rights of the defendant's Idaho and U.S. Constitution's right to a fair and impartial jury. I'm not sure how that particularly happened. Next, that the prosecutor engaged in coercive, unduly influence, coaching, and intimidating tactics to manipulate a material witness in this case. Next, Mr. Means alleges that the prosecutor in this case violated the Idaho rules of professional conduct as well as the ABA rules by his actions, statements, and the like detailed on said audio tape. The prosecutor's misconduct could be construed under the witness tampering and witness intimidation statutes as criminal acts. The prosecutor's misconduct has made him a material and necessary witness in this criminal case. Further, the defense intends to file additional motions as it relates to the evidence and intends to subpoena the prosecutor as a witness to support these motions, future motions, and the trial itself. He further alleges that the prosecutor's misconduct has caused the potential for future civil directed at or involving Fremont County, Madison County, as well as the prosecutor and any other entities involved or associated with this misconduct. So I guess he's saying he's going to sue them too. And the prosecutor's misconduct has included concealing evidence in violation of Brady and the rules of Idaho criminal procedure. So the Mr. Means then moves in his prayer in the motion that the prosecutor be removed. So let's talk about this motion, okay? First, if you're going to accuse another attorney, let alone a prosecutor, of tampering with witnesses, engaging in criminal acts, I'm telling you, you better have your ducks in a row. You don't go around accusing people of ethical misconduct unless you're absolutely certain. And you know what? If you have such glaring proof of such misconduct, you better specifically articulate it in your motion. You don't use this overall veiled attempts. And let me tell you, if Mark Means is wrong about these allegations and the judge denies it, guess what? He could face his own ethical issues related to this. You don't go around throwing the big E word, ethics, unless you're absolutely certain, and you better put it in the motion. Mark Means also alleges that his client's due process rights have been somehow violated. Well, the matter was turned over in discovery. These audio recordings were turned over in discovery. So the prosecutor is complying with this. I'm sure there's going to be an explanation as to why they were not turned over earlier if that's what he is alleging. Now, just because a prosecutor interviews a witness, and most prosecutors usually take an investigator with them or that they record the recordings, but normally you have a witness. Why? Because then a prosecutor would in fact be a witness. That's why when I go talk to a witness in a case, I always take my investigator with me to take notes as to what was said. Otherwise, I could become a potential witness. And if you are a potential witness, you can't be on the case. So you always take a third party to record that. My guess is the prosecutor in this case, Mr. Wood, this is not his first rodeo, ladies and gentlemen. These recordings were probably done and there was probably another witness there. So he's not going to be a witness. Now, if you think that the prosecutor was heavy-handed telling somebody that we're going to call you as a witness, somehow thinks that you're intimidating them, guess what? You save that for cross-examination. What does Means think he's going to get by getting the prosecutor off? If you are going to file that motion, you better have, it better be a silver bullet, okay? Because when you go after the king, you better make sure you kill him. Otherwise, it's going to get ugly. I think this is going to get ugly for one person, Mark Means. I've expressed my concern about Mr. Means. Mr. Means filed a motion for a bond reduction argument early on in this case because he thought one of his calls was recorded and therefore he was entitled to have his client removed and released from custody. There was a hearing on that and Mark Means looked like a fool. I think Mark Means, and I will reserve judgment, but I'm just telling you, there's nothing in this motion that makes me think that the prosecutor needs to get off this case. Mark Means may want to contact ethics counsel and see how he may want to correct this because I think he's over the top. We'll see if Mr. Pryor files the same motion on behalf of Mr. Daybell. As of right now, nothing. And if this is where he's going with it, he's got a big, big problem. We'll see how things shake out. But like I said, I think Mark Means is in completely over his head. And when you go around making these allegations, you better be 100% right. And I'm just telling you, from this motion, it's not there. It's not there. Unless there's something egregious on that recording, and I'm going to bet, and I'm going to guess that it's not, Mark Means may be the one getting off the case because he's going to have to deal with attorney regulation. We'll see how things shake out. Let me know what you think. Next on the docket, Barry Morphew is still looking for his wife, Suzanne. It was reported that Barry Morphew was at the Safeway in Salida on December 10th, passing out handbills with pictures of his wife, Suzanne Morphew, who exactly 7 months to the day went missing. Now, as we've discussed before, Barry Morphew told law enforcement he was in Denver preparing for a landscaping job at the time that his wife was reported missing. The couple's two daughters, Mallory and Macy, were also away on a camping trip. Now, Barry Morphew has come under suspicion by some of his wife's family in recent months. Specifically, his brother-in-law, Andrew Mormon, told news agencies in September that he feared his sister's disappearance is related to domestic abuse. In other interviews, he criticized Morphew for not participating in large-scale search efforts to locate his sister. Morphew put the family home up for sale in October, saying he is scared to return and that strangers have been roaming the property. And as always, and we've mentioned this when we discussed this case last night when we went live, Barry Morphew has not been charged with anything and he is given the presumption of innocence. There's nothing at this point that would lead the police to say that he is the person of interest or that he had anything to do with his wife's disappearance. Let me know what you think. The grieving husband passing out handbills looking for his wife exactly 7 months to the date that she went missing. Good TV, good theatrics, or caring husband? Let me know. Before we continue on with the docket, let's take a quick recess from a word from our sponsors. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report that's going to give you this person's social media information. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right. I cannot urge you enough. Go to crimetalksearch.com and sign up for that background subscription service. It's important to know with whom you are dealing. Well, next on the docket, a fashion magnate, Peter Nygaard, charged with a sex trafficking scheme. That's right. Federal prosecutors unsealed sex trafficking charges Tuesday against Canadian fashion magnate Peter Nygaard, linking him to a suspected long-running scheme involving at least a dozen victims in the U.S., Bahamas, Canada, and other locations. Nygaard, 79 years old, was arrested by Canadian authorities Monday in Winnipeg at the request of U.S. officials. Prosecutors allege that Nygaard, for 25 years, used the resources and influence of an international fashion empire to recruit and maintain adult and minor-aged female victims for Nygaard's sexual gratification and the sexual gratification of his friends and business associates. Sound familiar? I wonder if there's any relationship or if this came out from something related to that guy named Jeff. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. It's also alleged that Nygaard frequently targeted women and minor age girls who came from disadvantaged economic backgrounds or who had a history of abuse. Grooming perhaps? That's the word they use. That's right. He controlled the victims, allegedly, through threats, false promises, or modeling opportunities and other career advancement, financial support, and by other coercive means. Obviously, Mr. Nygaard is given the presumption of innocence, and we will continue to follow that case. Sounds very similar to that guy named Jeff, who also had a place in the Bahamas. Very interesting, don't you think? Next, a follow-up on the 2-year-old that was abandoned at a Goodwill center in Mississippi. Now, we brought you this story yesterday, and I had a feeling that something just wasn't right. Needless to say, a woman, the mother of the child who has not been specifically named, said that she had no intention of leaving the child, whom she identified as Sergio, according to a Facebook Live interview she gave over the phone to an activist from the woman's hometown in Memphis, Tennessee. So Antoinette Smith stated that she traveled from Memphis to Nashville with a male acquaintance. She left the child behind in Memphis with someone that she believed to be this man's sister. She said the man, whom she did not name, later revealed to her that she was actually his girlfriend. She claimed that the man, whom she did not identify, left her at a Nashville store after she refused his demands to work for him. And when she means work for him, basically as a prostitute, she's alleging that he was a pimp. Needless to say, the Child Protective Services has the child, who Ms. Smith identified as Sergio, but they're not going to give this child back until they know that the child is going to be put into a safe environment. And it's also unclear if Ms. Smith was the woman who was identified as being arrested or contacted by police in relationship to the abandoned child at the Goodwill Center. We'll see and continue to follow up on that particular story. And next on the docket, a story that will maybe restore your faith, maybe just a little bit, in mankind. A Mississippi police officer by the name of Bradley Sanders, he apparently had pulled over a woman by the name of Miss Naya Supner and basically had given her 3 tickets. And when the tickets were being given to her, he said, "Follow me. Let's go buy your baby a car seat." Now, Miss Supner wrote that her son was trying to get out of his, quote, big boy seat during this traffic stop. The trooper told news media that the boy was buckled in, but clearly the seat was too large for him. So Sanders said that he received a call from his wife while he was writing out the 3 citations in his police car, and then he thought that he was going to do something for her. So he told Sanders, "Follow me, let's go get a car seat for your son." And he stated, "I wanted to make a difference in somebody's life." Now, obviously the police officer didn't have to do this. He probably could have torn up the tickets, which will probably be dismissed. But either way, that just shows you there are good people out there. There's a lot of channels out there that always root for the police, and there's lots of channels out there that are always against the police. We've said this before. We'll call it the way we see it. But this police officer, this state trooper, Bradley Sanders, good job. It's nice to see things where people do good when they have no benefit to do it other than simply being nice. Next, an inmate escapes from a transport van while in a drive-thru. Now you would think, hey, maybe he was at Burger King. He wanted to have it his way. No, they were at a McDonald's. And so the police are looking for a suspect by the name of Leon Taylor. He's still missing. They haven't been able to find him. According to the police, he shouldn't be that hard to find. Why? He's wearing a belly chain. That's right. There's a chain strapped around him, and he's handcuffed with the belly chain. He has a leg brace, and also, like I said, he's handcuffed. Who could be that difficult to spot, given the fact that he's also in an orange jumpsuit? Well, apparently the police are having a little bit of a problem. So according to police reports, Mr. Taylor was being extradited from Texas for robbing and fatally shooting an individual by the name of Daniel Nitschke in Chicago on November 19th. Police say that Taylor was picked up from O'Hare International Airport in Chicago. Police then reportedly said that they stopped at McDonald's to ensure that Taylor was fed before he was booked into the Lake County Jail. While in the drive-through lane, apparently Mr. Taylor allegedly asked the agent to roll down the window so that he could spit. The agent obliged, leading Taylor to escape from the window and flee. Mr. Taylor is described as 6 feet tall, weighing 162 pounds and having hazel eyes and brown hair. He was reportedly wearing a gray hoodie on top of a black hoodie, black Puma tennis shoes, and black jeans. So as we talked about yesterday, when you escape, that really doesn't do you much good. You're going to get caught, because where's this guy going to go? He's going to go back home. Guess who's going to be waiting for him? That's right, the police. He has no money, so he's going to commit more crime on top of the escape, which is a crime. Things are not looking good for Mr. Taylor. And finally on today's docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, what's the logical thing to do when you're sitting around talking about sports, right? If you don't necessarily disagree, let's face it. Some people think the Denver Broncos are the greatest team ever. Other people think that the Las Vegas Raiders are the best team around. In this case, a Massachusetts native now living in Florida was arrested Saturday evening for allegedly battering a partially disabled victim who disagreed with him about liking teams from Boston. The police charged Jeffrey Randall, 59, because he engaged the victim in an argument about sports teams from Boston while the men were inside Randall's Street, Petersburg residence Saturday evening. When the victim disagreed with Randall about liking teams from Boston, Randall did the logical thing and became physically aggressive and pushed the victim twice in the chest. Oh, and did I mention that the victim is partially disabled and unable to defend himself? Well, so Randall was arrested on misdemeanor battery charges. He was released from county jail yesterday morning on his own recognizance, and his rap sheet includes convictions for theft, trespassing, disorderly intoxication, probation violations, battery, and battery on law enforcement officers. Needless to say, Mr. Randall really likes Boston sports teams, and he is willing to push around disabled people. I'm a little surprised that it's only a misdemeanor charge, because usually when you start picking on people that are usually defined as at-risk adults, it immediately jumps up to a felony charge. Obviously, Mr. Randall was given the presumption of innocence, but that's right, you, Mr. Randall, and Boston's had some pretty good teams, but I'm not sure they're the best ever. Hope you don't come and push me around. But guess what? You have qualified for the Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day. And if you win the Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Week, you could win Crime Talk merchandise. I will send you a mug personally. Just don't beat me up with it if we don't agree on Boston. All right, Mr. Randall? All right. That's all we have for you today here on Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. Hey, if you didn't catch our live show from last night, I thought it was pretty good. People have said it was pretty good. Go check it out. You can check it out not only on YouTube, but you can check it out on the podcast. You can go to Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter as well. Thanks for watching. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.